at school with the guys, you know, he is the one, you know, hey, do you need a ride to school or to work out? Some kids, they didn't have transportation to go to practice, you know. He was always that person. He was always that person you can call on.
That's Letitia James. Today we're devoting our whole show to the life and death of her husband, a high school football coach named Nekoma James. He was a pillar of strength and support for Lafayette High School in Oxford, Mississippi. Nekoma died this August, and the path forward for his team and his family, it all says so much about the tough decisions facing communities around our nation. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, September 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Liz Merrill, I am a huge fan of your work. Thank you for joining me on ESPN Daily.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So I want to start with you telling me a little bit about Lafayette High School in Oxford, Mississippi. Where is it? What's the area around it like? Who goes to school there?
There are two high schools in Oxford. They're separated by 1.9 miles. There's Oxford High, which has the higher tax base. And then you've got Lafayette. And it's where all the rural kids go. They're from a smattering of small towns and places that you might find traveling down gravel roads with directions to turn right at the oak tree. They have this annual football game. And, you know, during Spirit Week, the Oxford kids dress in country camo, like the Lafayette kids, and like with hunting gear and stuff. And the Lafayette kids dress like preppies. But they are both very good at football and have very solid football tradition.
Yeah, football tradition in Mississippi, that might be one of the main things that I know about it. It's football obsessed. If you were to sort of describe the magnitude of the obsession, how obsessed is Lafayette?
It's all they talk about. And it's a big part of everyone's lives. It's important there because they don't have pro sports. They love it, and it's cliche, but for a lot of these guys, they're getting out of these small towns and going to Mississippi State or Ole Miss or somewhere in the SEC, and it's just, it's the biggest thing. It's almost like breathing there is what football is like in Mississippi.
So, Liz, your story is about one of the people in the middle of this vibrant culture around football at Lafayette High, Nekoma James. Nekoma died this summer at age 42, and it was determined after he died that he had COVID-19. Now, you got to know him by talking to his family, talking to his community. What can you tell me about who Nekoma James was?
Nekoma was a football coach. He was a math teacher. He wore bow ties to school every Wednesday, in part so he could set an example for young men, particularly black young men, about the importance of making a strong impression. Liked to give people nicknames and tell jokes. But when it got time to be serious, he locked in. And Lafayette has won multiple state championships. The last one they won was in 16. And, you know, his wife shared some photos of him clutching very hard onto that trophy. So talking to his wife, Letitia James, I reached out to her and we talked for like over an hour and a half.
Hopefully it's working, yes. I guess. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
She really told the story.
At first, I was mad. I'm still a little mad, you know, and I'm very, very religious. I believe in God. But I just want to know why. Why him? I could not understand why him. But then I thought about it. I was washing my face one day, and it's like, why not him? All the kids respected him. The people in the community respected him. A lot of these people is not taking COVID seriously. But Coach James caught the COVID, and Coach James died from it. So it was, they put a realness on this pandemic we have, make people more aware, you know. I believe that, you know, he was a well-respected man in the community. And if it could happen to him, it could happen to me.
He was her best friend. You know, they started dating and, you know, he was a romantic, though. I mean, when he proposed to her, he called a bunch of their friends together at a restaurant.
They started singing happy birthday to me, presented me the cake.
The cake comes out and it says, will you marry me?
I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I tears was coming out of my eyes, you know.
Now, having said that, he was super obsessed with football. You know, she watched film with them, and she sort of eased her way into and acclimated her life into being a football wife. And she loved it. She loved being a part of that. It was part of her identity, almost as much as coaching football was a part of Nakoma's identity.
So, Liz, I want to get into the timeline of what ends up happening to Nakoma, because we know now that he died of COVID in early August. But I want to know about the events that all led up to that. What was Nakoma's daily routine, for instance, throughout the summer as a coach?
So they were allowed to practice this summer, the off-season workouts. Nakoma went to every one of those up until he got sick. He was one of the guys who disinfected the equipment. And just part of his sense of humor, he called the spray that he was disinfecting the equipment with the Corona killer. So it's like mid-July now, like second or third week of July, and the coaches have a retreat in the athletic department, and it's an overnight retreat. Nakoma's fine. He goes and gives a little speech about how special Lafayette is and how this group is special and that they all need to take care of each other. And probably a week or 10 days after that is when he started to not feel very well. He thought it was allergies and sinuses because he's had that before. He was a person who never got sick. He did spike a fever, and he was confined to that room in bed and not feeling well for that week where he was self-quarantining. But throughout that, Michael Fair, the head coach at Lafayette, would text him every day to check in. And you know, every one of Nakoma's texts were like, hey, I'm doing all right, or I'm doing better, or I can't wait to get back out there.
Take me through the sequence of those final 24 hours.
So Wednesday, his temperature has gone down. He's sleeping in their bedroom, and Letitia is on the couch, sleeping on the couch. After midnight, he texts her and he asks her if she can come into the room, and she's pretty tired. She just wants to go to bed, but she comes in and he just wanted to talk to her, and she got the sense that he didn't want to be alone. They wound up talking for a long time that night about various things, taking a trip, spending more time together. She finally goes to bed that night. He wakes up the next morning, standing up. He told her that morning, he said, you know, I feel the best I've felt since all this happened. But, you know, when she kind of passes by the room at one point, she can see him praying. And she's like, are you sure you feel okay? You know, he's like, yeah, I assure you, I feel fine. Around noon, he sort of collapses into her arms. She tells her youngest daughter, Gracie, call 911. And she's holding him, waiting for the paramedics to come. One of the paramedics recognizes him as Coach James. And so when they come into the bedroom, Nakoma's still in the bedroom, she leaves the room because she wants to give them room to work on him. She goes into the other room and starts calling members of the Lafayette family to tell them what's going on. She calls Coach Fair and says, hey, you know, Nakoma is about to be taken to the hospital. So Coach Fair drops everything, hops into his truck, and heads to the hospital and is waiting, you know, outside the emergency room for them to come. And he's waiting and waiting. It's like 40 minutes pass, and she has no concept of time. Eventually, a paramedic comes out and says that he's passed away. She said it was like he was speaking a foreign language. That she couldn't believe that what they were telling her. I mean, she thought it was taking so long because he's a big guy and they're trying to get him stable. And then they're trying to get him on, you know, that they're trying to load him, get him ready to load onto the ambulance. She doesn't realize that, you know, he's in the last minutes of his life, this 45 minutes. Paramedic tells her, you know, we're sorry. We've done all we can do. She just couldn't believe it.
You know, I didn't say bye to him, you know. That bothers me. It really, really bothers me that I didn't say bye. I thought everything was going to be all right. So it bothers me that I didn't tell my husband bye. But he would have been in the hospital by himself versus, you know, yeah, spending the last, his last with his family, you know.
Yeah.
He was with family. He wasn't by himself.
Shortly after Nakoma's death, Letitia found out that his COVID test had just come back that morning. It was revealed that Nakoma tested positive for the coronavirus.
All right, coming up, let's talk about how the community, how the team and the town responded to Nakoma James's death.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So Liz, what was the community response to the death of Nakoma James?
I mean, it was shock. It was devastation. He was such a staple of the community, been there for 16 years and, you know, was always the guy who was socializing with everybody, joking around. He coached special teams. Everyone was so used to seeing him on the sidelines. And so there was a visitation for him. It was a 5-hour visitation with the pandemic. It had to be scaled down dramatically. So it was just sort of a stream of receiving, limited receiving line. They wore stickers, bow tie stickers to honor him. But the football season went on. And he is constantly on the minds of everyone in the community.
So no one knew that Nakoma had COVID until after he died. Not even his wife knew that, as you explained, Liz. So logically, once that news comes out, you'd imagine that there is discussion around the football program about whether to pause practice, whether to resume team activities. Normally people quarantine as a result of such a thing. How did his death end up impacting the football program?
He self-quarantined before he would have passed it on to anyone. Like once he felt any symptoms, they're pretty confident that in their minds that, you know, he was away from people. You know, they were pretty determined to play, and they're pretty adamant about that they have the protocols in place to make this work. I mean, their thought process is that Nakoma would want them to play, that they're doing the safety protocols that are put forth from the state and the state health department, and that they can do this safely. Everybody's got a choice basically in this, and you know, they can opt out, but nobody wanted to. None of the players who had been working out that summer opted out.
Could you describe what the situation with COVID-19 in Mississippi was at that time? What was the larger context around the state when this was happening?
Yeah, I mean, they were in the throes of it being pretty serious at that point. Half of their COVID deaths occurred in July and August, and proportionately, Black people were affected greater than whites, you know, just as it's been the pattern throughout the country. So it was definitely a time where there was it was kind of running rampant throughout the state.
So the decision is made to play, and Lafayette season starts on September 4th. It's an away game at Horn Lake. I want to rewind to that first game. What did you learn about what happened there?
Well, they had it on pay-per-view, which seems, wow.
Wait, what do you mean by pay-per-view?
The game was on pay-per-view. So the state, part of their protocols is that the stadium can only be 25% full. So they had that game on pay-per-view where people in town could pay $10 and watch the game. And that helped them also. So their athletic department, because of all this stuff that's gone on, you know, it's kind of, you know, their budget has obviously been affected like every other athletic budget because of the pandemic. And they had the stickers on their helmets, and they're going to wear those stickers on their helmets throughout the season.
So Liz, you watched some of the game. What actually happened in it?
So Lafayette won its season opener on the road. They were playing a school in a higher class. It was a shutout for much of the game. They allowed a touchdown late. I think in talking to the players, I talked to three players around that time. You know, it might not have shown on the field or in the highlights, but, you know, there's a deep sense of sadness. There's a big hole that's left from him. And, you know, the common thing I got was that I just can't imagine not having him at practice and hearing him. And but at the same time, they wanted to play football.
That process of getting back to whatever normal might feel like, and simultaneously trying to honor the void that you just described that the players clearly felt. What about Letitia? What about Nakoma's wife here? How was she feeling? Because she didn't attend that first game. How was she reacting to the team playing football this season?
Well, I talked to her 2 days after the opener. And, you know, she's used to sitting with the coaches' wives in this special little area of the bleachers and packing her cooler. He'd iron these khakis he'd always wear, and she'd wear red. I mean, they had various things that, you know, you could and couldn't do on Fridays. It was a big event, you know, for the family every week. This is such a big part of their lives, and there was so much anticipation for the season. You know, for one, they're, you know, every year Lafayette is chasing a state championship, but the fact that they hadn't had sports for months, it was so eagerly anticipated. So, you know, here she is in this town of football crazed fans, and she just can't even go.
They have like a tradition where, you know, you run through, the players run through and bust through the signs or the cheerleaders hole or whatever. And, you know, the Nakoma would run right out there with them, you know. And so I just wasn't just ready to not see him on the sidelines.
She just went back to work recently, within the last week, and she was in the parking lot. They played on the road last week 3, and she's in the parking lot leaving, and she can see the buses loading up for the game. And she's on the outside now. She can't bear to be a part of it, but, you know, it's like life is moving on without her, without him. And it's unbearable, really. You know, she tries to keep herself occupied during those hours, and it's impossible in a community like that. And it's going to be like that for a while, and she knows that. But she says she doesn't know who she is right now if she's not Nakoma's wife and not a football wife.
We'll continue with some final thoughts on Nakoma and Letitia James's story in a moment.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So as Letitia is processing what seems like unfathomable grief, would you say that she supports the team continuing to play?
Yeah, I think she does. I mean, the people at Lafayette are her coworkers. Those players are, you know, in some ways Nakoma's kids. The wives and the support system staffers and, you know, the families are her family too. I mean, this has been her, you know, universe.
I would describe my community as one big family.
Yeah.
When I'm telling you, the community stepped in immediately, you know, because at this point I was not thinking, my best friend is gone. My husband is gone.
You can't lose that, first of all, because there is a pandemic going on. And she can't even hug her mom, you know, through all this because her mom's older, vulnerable. I mean, she can't hug her mom. She's grieving a lot of things. Most of all, she's grieving her husband and her best friend, but she's grieving this life that she had, you know, that maybe she'll never get back. I mean, is it ever going to be okay for her to go to a football game and not want to cry? She doesn't want to cry in front of people. She doesn't want to make them ruin their night or whatever. And she's mourning probably the world we live in now. We hit this mark of 200,000 people who have died, and each one of them in some way are probably experiencing these same stories.
Being in deep mourning, Liz, while you're in this place that is obsessed with the work of your husband, when we talk about that obsession, how football is this cornerstone of the school, of the town, of the country we live in, I mean, talk to me about what these players and their futures, what they're hinging on.
Yeah, as much as Nakoma's death devastated so many people and brought, you know, the pandemic home and sort of took away sort of this feeling of invincibility, and playing means everything for some of these guys. The economic situation, you know, a lot of these kids can't afford to pay for college. Some of these players are going to school only so they can play football. I talked to one of their better players who admitted as such that, like, this is what's keeping him going, is playing football. If you're a senior, a lot of these guys have locked up where they're going to go, but there are some players that are still on the fringe, and playing a season or even X amount of games is the difference between going to a JUCO and maybe going to a bigger school, or even getting a scholarship at all anywhere. And if they don't, and football is their life, then what do they do? And I think that's kind of the gray area here. It's like, you can still honor somebody, a coach that you love or that you really respect, and a teacher who's meant that much. But I think that you can feel those things and maybe fear the disease, but still really want to play for your own survival.
Thanks to Liz Merrill for sharing the story of Coach Nakoma James and Lafayette High School. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.